It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to Undrafted, a Dynasty Game Theory podcast brought to you by the Undroppables. I am your host, Scott Belanger, a.k.a. Jax Falcone. You can find me on Twitter, at Dino Game Theory. This is episode number 178. Let's roll. And we are nearing that NFL draft. I am a huge draft fan. I know y'all are too, obviously. You know, in the dynasty streets, basically you can't escape the draft talk and the prospect talk. And we'll get there. I have a very, very special guest this week. Mr. Heath Cummings is going to join me today. And I am super excited to have him on as he is one of the true professionals in this business, an absolute stud. I love Heath's work. I love everything he does. I was recently on his show with Chalk. And let me just tell you, man, it's just an awesome experience to be on with such a pro. So I'm super excited about that. But before I bring him out, I wanted to reference this sort of the Dynasty Game Theory 101. I'm eager to ask Heath because he's got a long history of playing in these leagues, and you know some of the dynasty strategy we talk about is something that you know I think is lost on some people. I sent out a tweet earlier yesterday, and it was basically that Dynasty Game Theory 101 thing where, you know, most of the time when people get a bad trade offer in their inbox, they tend to like get upset. They tend to like, you know, he asked for, you know, Cortland Sutton and I was going to give him 2 first rounders. So I sent him, you know, give me 2 first rounders and I'll give you some other shit bag. And I tend to think that we overreact to these bad trade offers in a way that isn't productive for our own team. And I sent out the tweet that you should be happy when you receive these tweets because one of two things is true. Either the manager who sent you the tweet is an idiot, or he thinks you're an idiot, like that you would accept that, or he thinks somehow that that's a good trade, one or the other, but you don't need to educate him. I'm curious to hear Heath's comments on this, so I'm going to bring Mr. Heath Cummings out. Heath is found at cbssports.com. He does so much work there. He's got a great new Dynasty show there that, of course, we were on, and it's an awesome show. You can find Heath on Twitter at Heath Cummings SR. Senior, apparently. He's got a junior? Can't wait to hear about that. Mr. Heath Cummings, welcome to the program.
I do have a junior, and thank you for having me. It's, this is going to be a good time. I enjoyed talking to you, and I love this first topic you've come up with. Like, I've never entirely understood the idea of being angered by a trade offer that you received. It's far more fresh. Like, the most frustrating thing to me is the people in your league that you can't get to budge an inch ever. And so the fact that someone's trying to engage me, even if it's in bad faith, even if they are really bad at this, like, these are the good guys. These are the guys that want to play fantasy football. These aren't the guys that you have to harass for 3 weeks to get to answer your call.
Yep. Yeah, I've played with people who spam trade like the worst trades over and over and over and over. And you know what I do? I just decline them. You know what I mean? Like, what's the problem? Why do I have to go to the DM and be like, dude, what are you, some kind of idiot? Like, why do I have to engage with that? I don't know what that does for me or for him, actually. It actually just ruins the relationship or makes it, you know, I don't know. It doesn't, I don't understand the end game of that process. You know, I don't know what that does, but I do know that by having a good relationship with that person and just sort of being like, you know, just like decline straight with no comment. Right. Or if there is a comment, be like, yeah, that just wasn't working for me, but thanks for the offer. Say something like that. Guess what they're going to do? They're going to continue to send bad offers. Now, again, one of two things. They either think you're an idiot or they're an idiot. Well, if they happen to be a little bit unaware of the values and that's why they're doing it, that's the best one, of course, because now they might send you one that's bad, but in your favor. And this has happened countless times for me. They'll send another one somewhere down the line, who knows when, and you're like, holy shit, that's awful, but I'm winning it. So you just click accept, and then everybody in the league goes, dude, what the hell, bro? How did that out? How did you go? And I'm like, you know, offered and accepted, bro. And it's all because I just kept him or her, I suppose, engaged.
I think the biggest, if you want to call them fleecings, like we'll talk about this later too. And there's so many times when we think a trade is just a terrible trade, and it turns out that the team we thought that got fleeced won the trade. Right. So like, I hesitate to even use that term, but the trades that I've walked away from feeling the best about, almost universally, either that trade offer came from somebody else or they at least opened up the negotiations. It's very, very rare that I go to some, and maybe it's because I don't send out enough bad trade offers, but it's very, very rare that I go to somebody with a trade idea and then they accept my idea. And I feel like, man, I really killed them on that one, because that's not what my goal is. I think you make a good point about relationships. I am guilty of, in at least one of my leagues, just like leaving that guy on hold for a while. Like, I'm not going to take the effort to decline all of your trades all the time. I might have to decline three of them at once, but never. No, there's no reason to ever like talk bad to them about the trade offer.
Yeah. I mean, unless that's your goal is to talk bad about, then good for you. You did it, but I don't see how it helps you. And so long story short is, you know, there was a question on the tweet that was like, well, I see your point, but how can I benefit from that? And I think I sort of laid that out too. And he said, well, how do I benefit from them thinking I'm an idiot? Well, the point of the matter is I've always said, and you might enjoy this, Heath, my job isn't to educate the league. Like, if someone sends me something, I'm not going to be like, bro, check out, you know, CBS Sports rankings or Jax's rankings or Fantasy Pros or Keep Trade Cut or whatever. Look at the rank. Why do I want to start educating him? If he's an idiot, let him continue to be an idiot. You know, why do I want to? My job isn't to educate him as to the how these trades work. I mean, unless it's a real friendly league, but I mean, if you're playing for real stakes or whatever, like, let him stay where he's at, where he has no real good concept of the value of picks or the value of, you know, quarterbacks in a league. You don't need to educate him. Dude, this is a super flex league. Quarterbacks go for two first rounders or whatever. Then all of a sudden you're like, dude, why the hell did you tell him that? You know, in other words, all of his misgivings could be your opportunities for edges. And with so much information out there, if you still are playing with someone who has those, you know, inadequacies in terms of knowledge, why fill in any blanks for them? Just let them continue to move on, because those edges are rare. I can even remember, Heath, and you can share this, but when I first started, you know, playing Dynasty versus Redraft, I'd played Redraft for years. I know football, I know fantasy, but Dynasty was a new valuation of players and picks, and it's a whole new, you know, chessboard, for lack of a better term. And it took me a minute to kind of get used to what things were in terms of value. And if someone left me out in the cold a little bit longer, it would have taken me longer. But a lot of times people educate, you're like, oh, cool, good to know. Thanks. You know,
no, and I like, I'll go back to that. What's the value of them thinking you're an idiot? The easiest way to understand that is try being someone who does this job for a living and playing a group with 11 of your high school friends. They will not deal with you. It's like what's going on with the Kansas City Chiefs in the NFL right now. No one wants to help make you better. nobody treats the guy they think is an idiot like that. They get an offer from the guy they think is an idiot and their ears perk up. How am I going to take advantage of this? Oh, he sent me a bad off trade offer when it's actually what you wanted them to do. So yes, there's an enormous advantage. The last thing that you want if you're trying to be active in a league with people is for them to think you're the smartest or best player in the league.
That's exactly right. I will say that my worst team, Heath, is my listener league. I have two of them. I just drafted another one, but my first listener league, I'm getting crushed in that league. It's absolutely awesome, actually. But like the point of the matter is exactly what you're saying. Each one of them is like, F that guy. Like, you know what I mean? That's the mark. We're all against him for sure, you know? But of course, you know, and it's actually really cool to see that. So yeah, when people think that you're the idiot, sometimes you can fly through and make some things happen, and you're 1,000% right, man. But speaking of idiots and speaking of the Kansas City Chiefs, I know you're a Chiefs fan. What did you think of the Stephon Diggs to Houston and anywhere but Kansas City stuff that came out?
Well, I just troll Bills fans by saying that's the reason he and the Texans had to agree to get rid of the rest of the contract, because this is just a 1 year step off so he can get to where he wants to be, to play with Patrick Mahomes, the best quarterback in the NFL.
You think that's going to happen?
I doubt it, because I don't think Stephon Diggs is going to go anywhere for a discount. And I don't think the Chiefs are going to pay a wide receiver over 30 a large chunk of money. That just doesn't seem to be their MO right now. But I would love it. It'd be great content. But I think for me, the biggest takeaway was just awesome for CJ Stroud. I struggle a lot more with the idea of what this means for the wide receivers who were in Houston. I think that there's a very good reason to have both the opinion that Diggs is done and the opinion that he's going to bounce back and everything's fine. Like, I don't think we have enough evidence in either direction there.
Agree.
And I don't want to speculate on the Bills situation too much, because that's going to change a lot in 2.5-3 weeks. But the one thing that I think seems pretty clear is CJ Stroud to the moon.
Yes. Well, by the way, CJ Stroud to the moon, apparently farther than that, as Keep Trade Cut was screenshotted a bunch of times with him valued as the QB1. I don't know if I'm ready to go that far, but before I ask you that, let me get back to the three wide receivers there, because I think that's where some value will be had. Someone's going to win there. In other words, you know, some dynasty players are going to bet on Nico, Diggs, or Tank, and it's very unlikely they all finish with the same line, right? Each of them go for 1,004 touchdowns. That's that, right? Very unlikely. So someone's going to come out the winner. I'm talking just in 2024. I had Wiz on the show last week. He made the great point that both Nico and Diggs are both free agents at the end of this year. So maybe Tank Dell is a good buy in Dynasty, because he might be sort of viewed as the odd man out, but probably not, especially for the long term. All that being said, though, my question to you is more, who do you think, rank these in order, most PPR fantasy points this year, 2024, Nico, Diggs, and Tank?
Yeah, no, I'll do it, but I don't want to at all.
Me neither. Me neither. I don't know. That's why I asked the question.
Right now, I have it Nico, Tank, Diggs. I think they're all within like 25 points for the entire season of each other. The answer is probably which one plays 17 games, in my opinion.
Totally.
The takes I have that I feel more comfortable with is Tank is my favorite wide receiver on this team in Dynasty. Yep. And I don't think that there's going to be a true alpha number one, which there wasn't really last year. Like, if you like Nico just absolutely broke out in every way possible and had like 109 targets last year. Now the guy that most negatively impacts is Diggs, because he's not going to produce the yards per target or yard that Nico or Tank Dell do. He's not going to produce the fantasy points per target, I don't think, that Nico and Tank Dell do. So if he goes from 10 targets a game and now everybody's at 8, I think that's a much worse situation for Stephon Diggs. And I don't think they bring him in and cancel out the last 3 years of the contract if their plan is, we want Nico and Tank Dell to take a back seat, we're going to throw the ball 10 times a game to Stephon Diggs.
Right. Yeah. It. You know what was funny to me was that that they were in the market for a wide receiver the whole time. That was kind of scary to me a little bit. Mm-hmm. I was like, wait a minute. They have Nico, they have Tank, and I mean, you know, they have Schultz. Even Noah Brown was really good last year. Maybe that's a mirage. Maybe they didn't, but they brought him back too. And then they were still in the market for – you know, for Keenan Allen, and then made the move for Diggs. And I was like, I wonder if this is a, you know, a negative for either Nico or Tank in terms of how Houston feels about either of those two players.
Right.
And then I sort of was like, maybe not, maybe I'm overthinking this, and maybe it's just a move to make sure that you're that great, you know, all season and in the postseason with a rookie quarterback on a rookie pay scale. You know, that's probably more like it.
I think you could make the argument or projection that, like, there were concerns about whether a guy Tank Dell's size can stay healthy in the NFL, and he did get hurt last year, so maybe that's a concern. But if it's not that, then it seems far more likely that they're just not planning on keeping Nico after this year.
Yeah, I guess, right? I mean, who knows? Maybe it is a one-year deal. They did fashion it that way. They did sort of, like you say, cancel all the money, allows Diggs to be a free agent at the end of this season. They can only franchise tag one of them if they choose to do so, Nico or Stephon Diggs. I think in a PPR setting, I think I'd take Tank one. And then I have no idea, just because I think, look, when it comes to who's going to be open, I think Tank Dell will be open, and he's going to be moved all over the place. I, you know, obviously with Nico being an alpha X, Diggs, I don't think you're going to be like, hey, man, you're in the slot. I think that's the interesting thing, is just sort of this playing time. Tank played a lot on the outside.
Right.
Maybe that's what they don't want. Maybe they want to let Tank dominate from the slot. I'm just trying to, you know, galaxy brain this thing as to what is their motivation. They've been very, very smart and very, you know, very good at this stuff. So
maybe the,
you know,
real galaxy brain is they bring in Diggs to make sure that Nico doesn't put up too gaudy of numbers, so he's not too expensive.
Shit. That's huge galaxy brain. I love that one. That's my favorite one. Yes. The internal box out for contract.
Yes.
Yeah. So good. Well, either way, I think all three of them, it kind of reminds me of that, you know, what was it? Amari, Gallup, CD year or whatever. Mm. I think that was the three of them when, you know, CD was a rookie. And I was like, I projected all three of them to basically be right around, you know, 100 to 120 targets, like all three.
Right.
And you could really see that as being the case here. You know, I think Nico, like you say, topped out at 108 targets and broke it. Maybe he's the one who sees 90 to 100. You know, he kind of falls off a little bit. And I think that's the way I like it. I think Tank, Diggs, then Nico, believe it or not. Just, I don't know if that makes any sense. I have no idea. I would be just as happy to throw all three names up in the sky, and whichever one lands closest to me, I'd go that way.
It seems, though, that, like, there is, like, if you're just talking about 2024, there is going to be an opportunity for profit, because early impressions I see all have Tank last.
Yeah,
I think Tank's ADP is going to be last. Now, in terms of dynasty value, I think, I don't know right now if Nico or Tank is, but I would assume Tank slightly more valuable, depending on the person. Like, there's Nico Collins stands out there that think he's still a top 12 wide receiver.
Yeah, CJ Stroud, he's your quarterback what in dynasty?
I intentionally hadn't updated the dynasty rankings since that move, because it's been kind of a, I don't know about what your process is for putting together dynasty rankings, but I'll give a little peek behind the curtain in mine. I'm a guy that, I like to use the projections process at the start of every redraft season. And I like to use that process, including what I have as an estimation for someone's upside, a certain weighting for age and risk. And I'll put together kind of a number or a value for each player. Now, this is not the type of formula where I just set it and forget it. Then I will go through the rankings and be like, no, I like this guy more than this guy, and I'll figure out which number I need to tweak to get them in the right order. Too many times over the last few months, I've been trying to hold CJ Stroud down.
Yeah.
Because before this trade, I had him at QB5, and I just could not rank him ahead of Allen or Hurts or Mahomes or Lamar.
Right.
I don't think I can pull back on that anymore. I just don't. I don't know what my, like, sure, the justification is he's not going to run for 12 touchdowns, 15 touchdowns. He's not going to run for 800 or 1,000 yards. And so maybe he doesn't have quite as much upside. But the guy just led the NFL in both passing yards per game and interception rate as a rookie quarterback on a team that was terrible before him. And as much as we love Nico Collins and Tank Dell right now, it's not like he did it with Jamar Chase and T. Higgins. He's the one who turned those guys into the stars that they are.
Yes,
sir. So, and I feel much more comfortable with the way that he plays football and the way that he scores fantasy points, projecting 10 more years for CJ Stroud without any question at all.
Yep.
I don't know how Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson game is going to age, or even Jalen Hurts, because we've not seen. So I guess I'll unveil it here. I think that was a long-winded way of saying that CJ Stroud is my QB2.
Yeah. Well, he's my QB3, and excuse me, and I agree with your analysis 1,000%. When I look at quarterbacks, like, there was a point back in the day, it was like, I think it was, I can't remember exactly what year it was, but it was like when Tom Brady was, maybe it was the year after his Super Bowl season, and I had made the argument that I liked Tom Brady over Daniel Jones in Dynasty, and of course, Daniel Jones was young, and I sort of said, who's more likely to play more games for the rest of their career, start more games? It's like, it was close. You know, it's like, well, who knows if Daniel Jones was going to get that contract. And even if so, like, he's still gotten, and he's still sort of tenuous here. And, and it was like, you know, you have to look at 1 year, 3 year. And then, like you say, like maybe a 10 year type of thing with these quarterbacks. It's like, until they have a contract or until they're, you know, secured in some way, like, two things can secure a quarterback: draft capital, which is not always going to secure him, i.e. see Josh Rosen. But, you know, by and large, like, I always argue, like, if Josh Allen had put up those first two seasons and was a second round draft pick, he probably wouldn't have seen year three, or almost definitely wouldn't have seen year three.
Certainly, I would say yes.
Right. And so he only got to year three because he was a top, whatever, seven, eight, whatever it was, five pick, whatever. And they were committed to that. And maybe they also, of course, they saw him. But look, Sam Howell was objectively, quote unquote, better in his first year than Josh Allen was in his first year. And he's already moved on. Right. You know, so these things tend to be important in Dynasty, because you could have said, look, it's Jameis even, you know, I mean, he was not necessarily good, but he was prolific, and now he doesn't have a job. So these quarterbacks, we can say what we want to say, but they're sometimes dangerous if they don't win. Justin Fields, you know, again, another one good for, you know, good for fantasy, not good for real life. So I'm with you in that CJ Stroud thing, that he's secure. Like, there's almost 0% chance. I mean, it's so close to zero that he's going to be like jobless in 6 years. It's unfathomable. So for those reasons, he can be placed ahead of, you know, some of the guys you mentioned. I totally agree.
I think another distinction too for me is it's like CBS standard scoring is 6 points per pass touchdown. I know a lot of other places are using a standard as 4 points per pass touchdown, and we don't have to argue which of those is better. Although I do think it's six. Like, the quarterback's the most important player in football. Let's not minimize his touchdowns. So it's easier to make that argument for Stroud in six, I believe, because I do think he's going to have some big time passing touchdown seasons.
Yep, I'm with you. His classmate, Anthony Richardson, did he do enough for you in year one to make him someone that you're buying into today?
Buying into, yes. He's currently my QB7 in Dynasty, and he's been right around there. There was nothing that I saw from him that I would say that I thought was discouraging. I was really pleasantly surprised by his work inside the pocket. This is not a guy who's going to have, I don't think, one of those 50 or 60 sack seasons. He gets the ball out and he makes the right decision. And so I got a little bit of concern about the health, because when a guy came into the league with health concerns and then had the injury in year one. But I also think if you told me that we get to November of this year and Anthony Richardson's in the Lamar Jackson discussion, like, maybe he's QB3 or 4 or 5 in Dynasty, I would not be surprised. I think Richardson could have that type of season. I'd like it if they'd give him somebody else to catch passes.
Well, we're going to get there, aren't we now? Who do you think scores more points, fantasy points? You can make it 5 points per passing touchdown. That way you can split the difference between because I don't want to hear if it's six, if it's four. 5 point passing touchdown. Who scores more in 2024, CJ Stroud or Anthony Richardson?
I do literally think if it's six, it's Stroud. If it's four, it's Richardson. If it's five, though, it's also Stroud. Okay. That's one of the things that I don't know if this gets talked about quite enough, but a lot of young quarterbacks really struggle in the red zone and really struggle with touchdown rate. And we generally see an improvement in that year two, year three, as they go on. I'm not sure how much of an improvement to expect for a guy who only got to play a couple of games.
Right.
So I'm expecting a little bit better numbers in terms of touchdown rate from CJ Stroud this year than what he put up last year. I'm still expecting something more like I think I only have Richardson projected for 20 passing touchdowns. So there's a pretty big gap there.
And 20 rushing touchdowns, don't forget.
I give him 10, but it might be 15.
I know, I'm only teasing. But look, the Cam Newton MVP season is on the table for this kid, for sure.
Oh, yes.
And that's where I think, you know, for me, you know, I think I have him right now somewhere around, you know, quarterback 7 or whatever. But look, if we're on the clock, we just did a startup, the Undroppable sort of, you know, group. We did, you know, an internal startup league. We just did it. And I think Anthony Richardson went like 5 or something. And I have no issue with that because his upside, and I think his floor is there. I'm buying into Anthony Richardson at his current value. He normally goes off at the 1-2 turn. I guess I would ask, would you rather have Anthony Richardson or Caleb Williams, knowing everything you know right now?
I don't think I can put Caleb Williams ahead of Anthony Richardson until I see him play football in the NFL. I've got a few questions about him too. Now, I think he also has big time upside.
He does.
But it was just a couple of games last year, but there were some things that Richardson showed me. I mean, Caleb Williams might waste 70 plays this year on sacks. Right. That's a real concern for him. So I'll go Richardson, but I would anticipate. I haven't added rookies yet to my position rankings. I'm stubborn and wait until after the actual draft happens.
Me too.
But I anticipate that Caleb Williams will be at QB8, one spot behind Richardson, one spot ahead of Justin Herbert.
Yep. I did add rookies 1 year before the draft, and I didn't like it. I just didn't like it. I don't like doing it. So
I really found that. For me at least, and this was the way it was when I was really into DFS, I didn't ever want to build a lineup until like Saturday because I have kind of a bad habit. If I take lock, I guess is what it is. Like I've already attached myself and put my name out there that this guy is my number 14 running back. And now something went terribly wrong. And so instead of ranking him at 50, I'm going to rank him at 35 because I had him at 14 before.
Love this take. It's exactly what happened. My rankings were kind of jacked up, and I'm like, how much further down do I move him down because he got sixth round draft capital instead of my projected third round draft? No, he got sixth round draft capital. Let's put him where he belongs and go from there. I 1,000% agree with you. I do think about and consider the question I just asked you, and I do have Anthony Richardson ahead of Caleb. And I think it's just – look, it's called playing the odds. For the most part, we've seen Anthony Richardson – survive and thrive in an NFL offense and an offense that is still tailor-made for him with Shane Steichen. And I think it's going to JT comes back. They're probably going to draft a weapon. They're certainly linked to a weapon. I think someone like Brian Thomas is projected to sort of go where look, Brian Thomas is a hell of an upgrade over Alec Pierce is what I'll say, you know, and if you can do Brian Thomas, Pittman and Downs, good Lord, if Jelani Woods is any good, like this is all set up for Anthony Richardson to have this huge, huge season. So I absolutely think Anthony Richardson over Caleb Williams. That doesn't mean that I think he is 100% better than him. I just think that there are fewer, you know, trap doors for Anthony Richardson. Whereas, look, Caleb could just not be able to, you know, be as good as he can be in the NFL. He could be a bust. Right. We've seen it too many damn times with these, you know, with these quarterbacks in the draft. It's like 50-50 proposition. Well, Anthony Richardson now to me is above a 50-50 proposition because of what we've seen.
Or agree? He could not be a bust, but he could just be a Trevor Lawrence. And
yes,
I'd much rather have Anthony Richardson than Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, there it is. I agree. Yeah. Boom. Solved. Speaking of this rookie draft quarterback class. Mm-hmm. All right. Here's a question. So you talked about it, and I'm glad you brought it up. You talked about it when you said 10 years of CJ Stroud, right? Mm-hmm. I'm glad that you think of it this way because that's the one thing that Trevor Lawrence has likely over Anthony Richardson. You know, it's like if I said to you, who's more likely to be playing in 11 years? You'd be like, well, Trevor, you know, over Anthony Richardson. That's not to say that you have Trevor over him just for that one data point, but it is a data point, isn't it? And I would ask you, in this quarterback class, which player do you think starts the most career NFL games, or at least you would place that bet on that player?
I would definitely place the bet on Caleb. right now. I think there's a chance that you could make an argument if Drake May goes to Washington, that, like, he deserves some strong consideration. But I just, for me, the more I get into these guys, the more I see that Caleb's really kind of in a tier by himself.
I agree with this take.
If Jaden Daniels goes top three, which I expect that he will, then his rushing ability and his upside and electricity is going to make him an easy QB2 for me. And I probably won't have him too far from Williams in terms of value. But that's not based on the fact that I think Jaden Daniels might play 11 years from now. It's based on the fact that I think the very best of Jaden Daniels might break fantasy football one season. And those are the seasons that we want to seek after. So I think, but in terms of like a guy that even I think I'm going to, from this class, is going to be starting 6 years from now, it seems much more likely to be Caleb Williams.
I agree. Yeah. And it's almost like kind of a, an easy bet, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe you could ask after that, who would it be? And you kind of gave the answer of Drake May. Of the top four, we're talking, you know, just the JJ, May, you know, Jaden and Caleb, of those four, which of those four do you think has the highest chance to be a complete bust?
You're not going to put this out before next Tuesday, right? But no, I've got Thor coming on the quarterback preview, and I hate to say anything negative about JJ McCarthy because I'm afraid that he will cancel on me. But yeah, I think it has to be JJ. Because to me, it seems like he's the guy that probably needs to change, or not necessarily change the most, but grow the most to be an NFL starting quarterback. I don't really think there's a very good chance at all that he's a good starter next year. And when you're dealing with guys like that, like, you have to get that improvement, or he just may not get a chance after 2 years. So I will say McCarthy. I would understand if somebody wanted to say really anyone other than Caleb Williams, though.
Right. Yeah. And actually, that's how I feel. I do feel like if you were asking me who's the second most solid starter, I would say it's JJ. For me. So that's interesting that you sort of feel like he's the sort of most busty. I don't know that I don't know what the ceiling is for really for any of them. I mean, you think about Drake May, it's like people talk about his athleticism. Sure. But he has like Sam Howell athleticism where it's like, he's not going to be breaking fantasy with his athleticism. You know what I mean? I mean, let's get over it. You know,
Do you think JJ is more ready than May right now?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah, I do. I mean, May, when you watch some of the film, it's like he does some, like, he gets a little off script and makes some kind of, he's not, look, what we saw from CJ Stroud was just sort of pinpoint, like, he was just so perfect all the time, you know, especially in the pocket. Right. You don't see that from Drake May. It's not just like, and so he has a little bit of that, you know, create plays, but he's also, I don't know if he's going to be able to do that at the next level. Look, every single one of these guys has to make plays from the pocket in the NFL. That was the thing about Anthony Richardson that I liked, was that he was very skilled in the pocket, even I don't know college football that much, but they were talking about how Florida's coaching was awful, how the play, you know, there were so many bad stories about Florida, but you know, when you looked at it, Anthony Richardson didn't take sacks. He didn't take negative plays. And you know, some of these other guys certainly do. I think, I don't know, they all scare me a little bit, but I think that JJ McCarthy, what was he, over 73% completion percentage this past year? Like he threw behind Joe Milton, he had the second best throw velocity. excuse me. He was, and I hate to do this, but he was a winner. That is the name of the game. And that's where Justin Fields is. You know, it's kind of like he's not winning. So therefore, you know, I do think there's something to be said for that, you know, converting on 3rd and 7, his 3rd and 4th down tape was great. I just think there's enough there with JJ, and then you're betting on the kid basically. Right. So he has the raw skills. He is a winner. And by all accounts, of course, one of the biggest cheerleaders in Harbaugh, but by all accounts, even outside of Harbaugh, the kid's, you know, got the right makeup. And I think a lot of that is what leads me to believe that he's the safest of the three, not necessarily the highest ceiling.
Yeah, I that's really interesting. I still don't know if anybody's great at this. I think one of the most difficult things how different the context is for these guys. Like, I'm not imaginative enough to be able to see Drake May throwing the ball 18 times a game for Michigan. I'm not I can't see JJ McCarthy having to throw it 40 times a game because his defense can't stop anybody.
That's right.
It's like it's complete. So Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot more negative stuff on tape for Drake May than there is for J.J. McCarthy, but there's just a lot more stuff. He dropped back twice as often. So, yeah,
That's right. That's a great point. Someone asked me, and you know, we can ask the rhetorical, like, what if J.J. McCarthy were at LSU? What if Jaden Daniels was in Michigan? What if, you know, and you kind of do that thing, and I'm not as imaginative either. It's very, very difficult for us to do that. And I would also say everybody sucks at evaluating quarterbacks.
Right.
I think the main reason is because there's no clear metric that shows us what they are, because, you know, so much of it is, you know, I just was watching – oh, Ernie Adams talking on the, by the way, what a great podcast that Julian Edelman does. Yeah. Have you paid attention to this? It's so good.
Yeah.
Games with Names. It's so good. So he had Ernie Adams on. They were talking about Tom Brady. He's like, you think you work as hard as Tom Brady? Get the hell out of here. He goes, nobody worked as hard as Tom Brady. You think Tom Brady just came in and was this, you know, Hall of Fame quarterback? He made himself a Hall of Fame quarterback. And who can tell which guy that is?
Right.
I don't know. We don't know that. And that's the thing that you need in order to be great in this league at that position, is that crazy, crazy drive.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I do worry about that a little bit with, you know, I don't have my Chiefs background today, but, you know, I mean, how many more years can Patrick Mahomes continue to practice in the offseason? Like, well, wow. Where's the motivation come from when you just go to the AFC Championship game every single year? And I think saw that a little bit in the middle of this season. And so I wonder with those college guys if there is some benefit to seeing how they dealt with adversity.
Yeah.
And the real question marks are the guys that had to deal with very little adversity throughout their college career.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, obviously, Drake May dealt with a lot of adversity.
I'm not sure he did it well.
yeah, he didn't do it well. And then I know J.J. McCarthy was set up for success in a lot of ways, but in some ways he wasn't. You know, it's funny because people are like, oh yeah, he was set up with they were awesome team, yada yada. And you're like, oh, do you like Roman Wilson? They're like, no, he's not good. Do they have any good tight ends or other wide receivers? No, they're all terrible. Blake Corum, whatever, fine, but he's not a very good pass catcher. It's like, wait, where's this? You know what I mean? So it's like, I don't know. I mean, you know, if you give J.J. McCarthy, Malik Nabers, and Brian Thomas, would he have done well? I think probably, so, dude. Yes. You know, probably. Obviously, he wouldn't have run for 1,000 yards. I mean, that's the thing, too, with, like, Jaden Daniels. I've said this, and I'm curious to your take. So, you know, a lot of the data supports that they played this way, and, of course, the conventional wisdom. Jaden Daniels would be like, it was almost like he was playing Madden. He's like, I'm going to drop back the pass. I'm going to wait. I'm gonna take a long time in the pocket because I have these two guys that are faster than all the other motherfuckers on the other team. I'm going to see if they can get open deep. If not, the defense is going to be stretched vertically so much, I'll just run.
Yeah.
And it was like, if I get sacked, so what? On second or third down, I'll hit one of these motherfuckers for a bomb, or I'll take it 15 yards. Like, the sack almost didn't matter. It was like, you know what I mean? So they were playing this game that game won't be played at the NFL level. So you have to say, okay, will he be able to play a different type of game and be successful at it at the next level? That's where Jaden Daniels scares me. I'm not saying he doesn't have the raw skills. It's just, does all that fit into a different type of game? Because linebackers can catch his ass in the NFL. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I think there's real questions. And like I said, that's why everybody sucks at quarterback evaluation.
Yep, that's exactly right. Well, one thing we don't suck at is wide receiver evaluation. We actually get that pretty well dialed in, although every year there's misses. I will tell you, Heath, my team and I, myself, Wiz, Chalk, and Coder came up with, you know, a model. It was really good. We have some proprietary, you know, sauce, spices in the model that helped us kind of, you know, identify some similarities between some of the busts over the years. We incorporated that, and it does some pretty cool things historically, and it tells us some pretty scary things about this class. But before I get into all that, I want to ask you, a lot of people are saying this is like the best wide receiver class since 2014. Just in general, what do you think of that statement?
Like, you scared me with the way you led into this question. So I feel like you're going to make me put my dunce cap on here in just a second. But honestly,
I love this.
No, honestly, I wonder if it won't be better. It's not hard to find landmines Like, yeah. We get our favorite wide receiver in the class goes to the Patriots and they start Jacoby Brissett. And our second favorite wide receiver goes to the Giants with Daniel Jones. And like things just, and neither team finds a quarterback. And like, so I'm not saying that, but I just think when you look, I was talking to a friend who doesn't really follow all this stuff. And he said, I'm kind of confused. He was talking about the Chiefs again, but he's like, a lot of people say you got to get one in round one because these guys at the top are so good. And a lot of people say, no, you can just wait because it's so deep. And I said, I think both of those things are true. Yeah. It seems like pretty universally, not almost everybody that I look at has Harrison, Neighbors, and Rome Odunze as the best three wide receivers in this year's class and last year's class, maybe in the class before that. And there's a lot of people who see startable wide receivers available in the 12 through 20 range of this class. So now there's a big difference, obviously, between those top three and the guys in the 12 through 20. But I do think it's both very good at the top and it's deep. So I'm optimistic.
Yeah, it's funny because I almost put in the question, of course, I send you a little bit of a show sheet. I almost put in the question what you basically almost answered, which is this. I was going to say, do you think that the reason it will have been a good draft class is because of top end talent or because of depth? And you sort of said both. And I keep thinking of this, and I think it's more going to be top end talent. Yeah. If you ask me, I think that is what's driving the quality of this class, because to sort of, you know, window into our model, Neighbors and Marvin Harrison Jr. scored identical in the model, which I think is interesting because they're not the same type of player.
Right.
They win in different ways. So for us, it was a really cool result for them to be the same in the model, and they're elite. They're right there with Jefferson, Chase, and CD in terms of being way, way up in the, at the top. They were, I think there's four or five players total in the same tier since 2018 as Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Neighbors. So that's where they show up in our model. And I think that that actually jives with what we think, right? We do think that these two guys are great. What's interesting for me has been a lot of times people are like, because I started to watch, I don't watch college football. Like, I just don't really, you know, I understand it. Of course, I do film work every year at this time, so I understand who's good. I'm a sports fan, so I understand who's good, right? But I don't really watch it on a weekly basis. I catch a little bit. But anyway, I put in the Malik Neighbors tape and I just started watching game after game after game. And I'm like, this, how could anybody be better than this guy? Like, this is unbelievable. And then you look at the numbers, our model spent. I'm like, I think Neighbors might be my wide receiver one. And what people would say is, oh, you're a hot take artist. And I'm like, no. I'm saying he's really good. Do you not think he's good or what? Like, what are we talking about? They're like, and so this thing about the sort of inevitability of Marvin Harrison Jr. as just obviously being so much better, I think is wrong.
Right.
Neighbors versus Marvin Harrison Jr., how do you see it?
Well, I don't think it's a hot take at all. I had Matt Waldman on last week, and he has Neighbors over Marvin Harrison. So there's lots of very smart people who do, and he says there's lots of people in the NFL who do. In terms of how it's going to be ranked a month from now, like it's close enough for me that it will be determined by who they land with and who goes first. As of right now, I'm kind of leaning in towards the Harrison to Arizona at four. Yep. And I don't think there's anything that could happen with Neighbors that would put him ahead of Harrison in that situation.
Chargers.
So I'm not as big of a Justin Herbert fan as some. He's very, very good. But
it's a good spot.
How many passes are they going to throw?
All of them to Neighbors.
I'd love it if those two guys both go there, and I think they're both top 40 redraft picks as rookies. And if that happens, so I would.
What about this one? This has been my funnest question. Neighbors to Atlanta.
Oof, man, this is crushing for everybody except for Kirk Cousins.
Right. Isn't that crazy?
I hate it, right? We're not going
to do
that.
Nuts?
But I do
because think it's so possible.
What
it's
you so were possible. Talking about goes back to that take lock thing that I was talking about. People have been excited about drafting Marvin Harrison.
Correct.
For like 3 years if you're a normal person, or five years if you're a weirdo.
Yes.
And so Neighbors was really, really good a year ago, but wasn't like, oh, he might be wide receiver one until this most recent year. And right. So I do think it's like we've been looking forward to Marvin Harrison for so long that that's why people act like that. But no, it's a coin flip and it might be closer.
They're both outstanding prospects. And when you start to look at prospects, of course, you and I are both experienced enough. I won't call us old, but we're both experienced enough to know that the outcomes are rarely precise. Right. You know, we don't know like, oh yeah, no, Marvin Harrison Jr. is going for 1200 yards this year. We don't know that. I don't know. Right. He's going to have, you know, there's so much irregularity to the result of what's going to happen. You know, you go back with Amari Cooper was that type of a prospect. You go back to Sammy Watkins was that type of a prospect in that famed 2014 class. You just never really know exactly how it's all going to pan out. So for someone to say, oh, for sure, that's wrong. But to say in terms of like ranges of outcome, I do understand just how good Marvin Harrison Jr. is as a prospect. And in a lot of ways in Dynasty Heath, I've said, you're almost better off having Marvin Harrison Jr. as your wide receiver one in this class. As a dynasty player and taking him over Neighbors just for the insulation of value.
Right.
If they both scuffle a little bit and they both kind of don't quite get where you want them to get in year one, Marvin Harrison Jr., I think his value will retain at a higher level than Neighbors because of what you just talked about. All the weirdos who loved him for 5 years are going to be like, he'll be fine. He's going to come around. So I think your value insulation is a little bit stronger with Marvin Harrison Jr., but I think either one of them could blow up just as well as the other.
Yeah, I think either one of them or maybe both could be top 12 wide receivers this season.
Sure, very, very possible. In that vein, do you think – I know you haven't done your rankings and neither have I. I haven't really put them in there, but I have done some startups. And, of course, when you're doing startups, for the way we do it, we buy the draft picks in the – you know, you can take the 1.01, then the 1.02 is – whatever. So we've had to make this decision. Do you think Marvin – well, I know where his value is, but do you think Marvin Harrison Jr. is a top five dynasty wide receiver for you right now?
Five, I will say no, but it probably is six or seven.
Yep, I think that's about fair. I think that's when I start to think about it. But it's close. Yeah, I think that's right. Odunze gets all the love now. I mean, Matt Harmon, who – right. I'm an idiot, by the way. I looked at my schedule and I had Matt Waldman on last week, and I have Matt Harmon next week after you. And last week or whatever, I said, I'm having Matt Harmon next week just because I misread my schedule. So I messaged Matt Harmon. I'm like, hey, man, what time Wednesday? And he was like, I'm good for what? And he puts the time for the 17th. And I'm like, right. And that's what I was like, whoopsie daisy. So anyway, I told the listeners last week that I had Matt Harmon this week. No, I didn't forget Heath. I'm an idiot. And all my listeners know that. So they love this. They love watching me be an idiot. But Rome Odunze is an interesting player because I think, do you see him as closer to the Marvin Harrison Neighbors or closer to the wide receiver four, whoever that is? Do you think he's closer to that group or closer to the elite group? And the reason I mentioned Matt Harmon is because I think it was the first time ever that it was like a he literally lit up like a Christmas tree on his reception perception, green everywhere on every route run, which is, you know, pretty awesome.
Yeah. Because I don't feel very confident about who wide receiver four is, I will say right now it's definitely Rome is closer to those other guys. And like Harmon, Waldman, those guys love him. I've mentioned this on JJ's show a couple of weeks ago. Like, I lean into what the really smart people say about these prospects because, like you, I don't watch very much college football during the season. And yeah, I get into the advanced stats and I get into the film, but there's people that are better at certain aspects of the job than I am, and this is one of those. And so I think he's a pretty clear wide receiver three, and there's a pretty big tier break after him.
I don't necessarily disagree with that. You know, one of the things that our model was trying to identify was if we look back, right, there's been a lot of misses in the first round or, you know, even in the second round when it comes to players like Quentin Johnston, N'Keal Harry, Terrace Marshall, you know, just a lot of big outside, you know, sort of X receivers that look like, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr., Rome Odunze, Brian Thomas, Keon Coleman, Ad Mitchell, right? They sort of play that role. And so that role of contested catch outside guy, so to speak, gets pretty dinged in our model. So Rome, first of all, the fact that they get dinged in the model and Marvin Harrison Jr. is one of the four or five best prospects in the model tells you everything you need to know about him as a player. He's going to be fucking awesome. But Rome also survives the model. And I think a lot of that is because of just how excellent he is, you know, at a lot of other things. So I agree with you that Rome is that good. We do have a player that beats him in the model this year, but he's not going to be my wide receiver three over Rome, as Rome will be.
I think there's a couple of things there. And one of them is, it's kind of like the Xavier Worthy discussion after he ran the 40 and, oh no, is he too fast? No, he's just a really awesome football player who's also faster than everyone else. He's not going to get drafted in the first round just because he's so fast. Bingo. And I think that, like, there's probably not very many guys, and I don't think Harmon had the names that you mentioned probably charted very many of them in college, but there's probably not very many of those guys, those big, and I've talked about it too, like, those guys have missed a lot. Hakeem Butler.
But there's another one.
Those guys were not lighting up the Christmas tree green. I mean, it was still lit up, but some lights are red. And so, yeah, I just think that while he does share some similarities to those types of wide receivers, he's so much better, particularly at route running, that I don't have the bust concerns with him that I do with, like, I have more concerns with Brian Thomas. I have big concerns with A.D. Mitchell. I don't really have any with Rome.
I'm with you 1,000%. 1,000%. I do think he's closer to the wide receiver two than he is the wide receiver four. Good job answering correctly, I think. Having said that, now, if you had to pick, who is your wide receiver four?
As of right now, I'm going to go with Xavier Worthy.
Yeah.
I do think the, like, first off, how much does the 40 time matter? Well, it matters a lot to me in that he goes from a guy that I was seeing mocked at the end of the first round or the start of the second round to a clear top 20 wide receiver. I think it's going to matter to some NFL teams. Also, he had some problems with drops, but he also makes spectacular plays. I don't think that's a real thing. No. So I just think, like, his type of profile, I feel more comfortable with Thomas, but Thomas would be right there behind him at five.
Yeah. Okay. So first off, I will say, before we move on, like, I tend to agree with you about Xavier Worthy being a better player and therefore the speed not being a problem.
Right.
What's interesting is that a lot of times the speed we count and then we count the draft capital.
Right.
And what happens is the speed is the draft capital.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, they only got drafted in that spot because they ran a blazing 40.
No,
we were looking at Xavier Worthy as a top six or seven, whatever you want to call him. I mean, certainly at least seven. I'm a little bit higher than him than that on him as well, pre-running the damn 40. So now the 40 just increases his draft capital. Don't count it twice is all I would say,
right?
Which I think you agree with. You know what I mean? But we were counting all the other good things about Xavier Worthy before that. Troy Franklin is somebody that I think is getting completely slept on. He's my wide receiver four.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's going to be hard for me to come off Troy Franklin. I mean, our model loves him, and, you know, he seems closer to Devontae Smith, Jordan Addison than he is to some of the comps I see him getting, which is like Jalen Hyatt and some of these other, you know, guys further down the board that did not do what Troy Franklin did in college.
Yeah, no, I had Franklin, and this is probably just me being a little bit of a victim of the combine, but I had Franklin at four before the combine. I had him and Worthy and Thomas kind of all in one tier.
Same.
And it went Franklin, Worthy, Thomas, and then Franklin went to the back of the line. And it's more about, like, if Troy Franklin goes 22nd overall in the draft, then I'm probably going to go back to him as wide receiver four. But I feel like it might be a mid-second round pick now. And so I may be like you said, I'm not putting these guys in my wide receiver rankings for this reason, but I am right now already projecting a little bit in where I have them ranked, where I think they're going to be drafted, because you have to, because I'm trying to put these rankings together for somebody that does I don't know why anybody would do this, but somebody who does a legitimate rookie draft before the NFL draft.
Yes, there are a lot that do it. By the way, I have found a way that I can make Troy Franklin your wide receiver four. I figured it out. I went and checked out Evan Silva's mock draft.
Yeah.
Okay. And he had Troy Franklin going to, I forget the team's name, but it was the, he went pick 32. I don't remember what team.
Whoever had the 32nd pick. Yeah.
Yeah. Someone there nabbed him up there. I think that might help you.
That would that'd certainly make him more appealing. Or he could go to the Bills, and then he's probably wide receiver four there too.
Jeez Louise. Yeah, the Bills, they're going to draft someone, you think? I mean, that's what they're setting up to do. Am I right?
They are, or we all need to move James Cook a lot higher.
Because, somebody's got and Kincaid, or I mean, who?
I was looking at that today, and like the usage difference for James Cook when they changed offensive coordinators, and then the 44 touches he had in the playoffs, like he might just be the undercover workhorse back on a team that wants to be 50-50 next year, is how they're behaving. Right. Now, my expectation is they're not only going to draft a wide receiver, but they're probably going to trade into the top 20, draft a wide receiver, and then draft another one later.
I think so, too. Yeah, I think they take two stabs at wide receiver. I don't remember how many picks they have, but but if they have enough capital to spend two picks, which, you know, I would think they'd find a way to do that by trading back to get a couple more picks, whatever the case would be, in a deep class, you might find, a way to get two rookie wide receivers on the team, which would mean that maybe you should be selling Khalil Shakir and Curtis Samuel right now in Dynasty.
I don't know that you can get a bag of footballs for Curtis. Well, I guess there are still Curtis Samuel truthers.
There really is.
I don't play with any of them anymore, I guess. Yeah. But they dropped out of my leagues during the great DJ Moore Curtis Samuel wars of whenever that was. But no, 100%. I don't actually believe that Curtis Samuel or Khalil Shakir are very likely to matter at all in a significant way.
What about selling? That's my point. But as of right now, they do. If you were to do your projections, they would have to matter right this moment. But I'm with you. I think that you have to put placeholder X and placeholder Y for somebody who's going to come in as a rookie and see some targets. But even still, even as a rookie, unless they're getting one of the top three, those other players are not necessarily the types of players we would project to be like 120, 140 targets.
No, I don't. But again, I'm not sure they're going to throw a ton of passes. Mm. I think they're just going they went pretty run heavy in the second half last year. And I think they might just stay there.
Yeah. Great point.
I mean, it kind of reminds me, who was it? It was Zimmer that was the coach of Minnesota. And he could not get an offensive coordinator to run the ball as much as he wanted to. And that's kind of what McDermott's gone through. And then finally, he gives Kevin Stefanski the job in the middle of the year. Who did he fire? I think the guy ended up going to Jacksonville. But he gives Stefanski the job in the middle of the year. And Stefanski goes super run heavy, gets the job again the next year. They're really run heavy. And Stefanski gets a head coach job. Seems like some of these guys that get the coordinator jobs, will you just do what the head coach is asking you to do?
Exactly. Absolutely. I think you might be onto something. Well, we talked about the wide receiver archetypes. You kind of gave us a little window in, and we want to talk about Brian Thomas, Keon Coleman, Ad Mitchell, A.D. Mitchell, I think he's a hugely polarizing player, because if you go to anybody with any sort of a model or any sort of analytical look at the class, A.D. Mitchell does not do well in almost any sort of analytical metric when you look at wide receiver success in the NFL. Yet, you talk to film guys and, guys who just, love college football. He's like, oh, buddy, he's a dominant player outside. He's going in the first round, if not early second round. It's like he's like T. Higgins. And it's like, well, analytically, he's not anything like T. Higgins. But the draft capital, maybe. Do you think he gets the draft capital everybody's singing about? Or do you think this is a little bit of a what do we think about A.D. Mitchell?
I think he is someone probably who draft capital should really influence how you feel about them, because he does have a very potential bust type profile. It's not hard to see why people look at him and see highlight reels and think, oh, wow, look how good that guy could be. He's one of the players probably that best illustrates the problem of just watching highlight reels, because he's really inconsistent and can just disappear. But then when he shows up, it's like, oh, is that one of the best players in college football?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
So my guess would be that he's not going to make it past round two because that potential's too great. But it's going to have to be a good landing spot and good draft capital for me to be interested. I don't really want to take him in the first two rounds of a rookie draft.
Between A.D. Mitchell and Keon Coleman, who do you prefer?
I don't really like either one, but
that's
maybe
a good answer.
Maybe a slight lean towards Keon Coleman. But it's like I think in the question you originally sent me, you put those two and Brian Thomas kind of in the same grouping, and I'm far more excited about Brian Thomas. I'm far more hopeful about what he could be. Although I do see that, like, why you might put those guys together, because if Brian Thomas busted, it wouldn't be the biggest surprise.
Yeah, and they play that sort of outside X role. And I think at the end of the day, here's what my take is, Heath, is that I like Brian Thomas, then Keon, then A.D. Mitchell, same as you. But I think Brian Thomas valued at wide receiver 4, I'll pass. A.D. Mitchell, you know, wide receiver 6 or 7, I'll pass. Keon Coleman, 8 or 9, I'll pass. Like, or whatever, you know, I think I'm basically passing on them at their ADP. I would move them down a little bit and have them as slightly lower down the board players. Although I do see the ceiling outcome with Brian Thomas. Hey, he's probably going to be a first round pick. He could go to some place like we talked about in, you know, the Colts, where all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, you sort of just see it all coming together. But I like this next group better player for player, which is Xavier Worthy, Troy Franklin, and Ladd McConkey. Boy, oh boy, that's a much better group. And I'll ask this question before we get to that. Which wide receiver outside the top three, meaning the outside of Dunze and the other guys, is the safest bet in the draft, you think? I mean, is it your wide receiver 4 and Xavier Worthy, or are you playing a little bit of ceiling there and do you like someone else better for just, like, safest bet to be a, you know, a solid NFL wide receiver at the next level?
I don't think that I would use the word safe and floor to get excited about any of the six guys that we've kind of got, we're talking about here. And so I will go with Worthy, mostly, but not because I feel like he's super safe either, but I do feel like he's got the upside edge a little bit on these guys. So I would go with Worthy, and he's probably just a little bit safer too, since I think he's going to be drafted as the wide receiver 4. The right answer is probably whichever one's drafted first by a smart team.
Right, right, sure. But, yeah, that's probably right. But my answer real quick before you continue is Ladd McConkey. I just think Ladd is like, okay, we just kind of – like, I'm not saying he's going to be great. I'm just saying he's – I just don't think he's going to be a bust. You know,
well, I almost asked you when you asked safest – Do you mean most likely to be playing in the NFL in 5 years, or most likely to be
kinda
a top 25 or 30 wide receiver in 5 years? I don't think Ladd McConkey's that, but he's going to play in the NFL for maybe a decade.
Right. Doesn't it feel like he's just like, I mean, I don't know what he's going to be fantasy wise, but I think it might be pretty good. I mean, his comps with athleticism and per route run production, I mean, his raw stats sort of disguise him a little bit, I think. And, you know, that happened to us last year with a player. I can't remember his name. Puka Nacua. Right. I mean, right. Puka did the same thing where, like, you know, his raw stats just didn't pop off the page. And you're like, well, yeah, but is he any good? I mean, you know, and then he didn't get the draft capital. Weren't really sure, but on a per route run basis, almost every single metric, that's where Puka shined. And I see the same type of profile in Ladd McConkey. I tend to really like him as a player. Now, he could get steamed up a little bit, and maybe that draft capital in your rookie draft makes it a little bit harder to push the button. But if he's early second or anywhere in that ballpark, I'm smashing Ladd McConkey all day long.
Yeah, and I prefer McConkey to both Mitchell and Coleman. So I'm not down on him at all. And maybe this was showing my bias. I was really surprised by his athleticism at the NFL draft. The gauntlet was impressive.
Very.
So I do think that he has more, like, people probably see him as a run a 7 yard slant and fall down. I think he can do some stuff after the catch. And he did some stuff down the field in college that probably would surprise some people. So yeah, I'm excited about him, but it's gotta be the right cost. He's probably not, under any circumstances, going to get into my top 5 wide receivers.
You mentioned Ladd McConkey can do some things after the catch. I just wanted to pull this up here real quick. this was final season. So this past season, final season, wide receivers, 2024 class, wide receivers, missed tackles forced. So not broken tackles. Missed tackles can be evaded tackles, right? Juked them out or whatever. But missed tackles forced per reception. This is PFF data. Who do you think was first in missed tackles forced per reception? So obviously after the catch stuff at the wide receiver position in this class.
Well, I feel like I should guess Ladd McConkey, right?
No, don't. Don't do that. Don't do that. Use the smart guess. You know who it is.
I don't think
the
I know.
Best either. After the catch player.
Who?
It's Malik Nabers.
Yeah, okay.
Malik Nabers, right? 33%. Jesus. I mean, you know, he's breaking tackles like crazy. Second, I'll give you that one, was Malik Washington. But third is your boy Ladd McConkey.
Yeah.
So he was breaking tackles or evading tackles. You know, he's really good after the catch. You know, I'll look at his yak here real quick. I don't know if it was quite as good because if I have it here, I don't know if I have it. I'll have to look it up. But yeah, he yak per reception. He was, let's see, where is he? Hold on, Ladd. 6.3 yards after the catch per reception. Some of that stuff can, you know, you'll get some screen data on that. And I know that, you know, the guys over at Fantasy Points have broken that down, you know, with and without screens. And a lot of that is, you know, pretty good to look at. But look, by any measure, Ladd was very athletic on the field, even when we see the white guy and don't think he is. You know what I mean?
Right.
There is a bias there for sure. We just do that whether we like it or not.
Yeah, everybody's going to comp him to Julian Edelman and Danny Amendola. And I'm excited to see where he lands.
Yeah, me too. Me too. This is an interesting question. So which wide receiver, maybe it's going to be your same guy again, but which wide receiver outside the top three has the best chance, you know, looking back in like 3 years and they end up, it's a Sammy Watkins thing. You know, he wasn't the wide receiver one in his class. And, you know, at first he was, but looking back, he's not. You know, when we look back on this class, who has the best chance of becoming the wide receiver one in this class, you know, in the rear view?
I guess I'm gonna be a sucker for the big guy now because I think it's Brian Thomas. I think his combination of size and speed, and if everything goes right, I could see him. Like it's so hard to imagine somebody from this class being better than Harrison or Nabers for me.
Right. Exactly. It doesn't make any sense.
You not only have to clear those two, but you have to hope that Rome doesn't hit his ceiling either. But
yes.
But no, I'll say Brian Thomas if I've got to pick one.
I think that's probably the right answer. I mean, like if he somehow gets to Buffalo or something and him and Josh just like, you know, have this huge downfield, you know, connection or something. I don't know. It's going to have to be something like that. But, you know, look, I see a little bit of that. I like Troy Franklin to you know, to 32, whatever. Again, I keep forgetting what teams there, but you know, Troy Franklin to 32 really works for me as well. You know, Xavier Worthy, I don't know. I don't know if he's that dynamic a player at his size. I think a little bit more Marquise Brown, but who knows? Maybe there's some way that he gets there too. Ladd, I don't see. So I think it's probably either Brian Thomas or Troy Franklin in some sort of way, but that's why I agree with you. So we have a saying on the show. It's zero shares, zero cares, right?
Okay.
So, you know, someone will say, you know, what do you think of Brian, you know, Brian Robinson or something? You just be like, zero shares, zero cares, man. 20 leagues ain't got one, you know? So, you know, which wide receiver in this class are you like least likely to roster? Who's your zero shares, zero cares all-star for this class?
I mean, it's always going to be dependent on like where they're being drafted. But as of right now, it's no question A.D. Mitchell. I see him going as wide receiver six, wide receiver seven with a first round ADP. And just like I said, I don't really want to take him in round two. So just almost no chance. Now, maybe something changes my mind, but I would say it's a pretty good chance it's him.
Yeah, Chalk and I both agree with that. So I it's like, you know, we're basically seeing it the same way. Look, and it is ADP because if you tell me I can draft A.D. Mitchell, you know, in the early third of a rookie draft, hey, man, that's pretty tantalizing. But if you tell me I have to spend, you know, that type of capital on him early on, it's just no chance. All right, let me pull this up here. Where are we going to go? Oh, let's do it. Let's do this. Brock Bowers. I'm starting to, man, I have resisted as long as I possibly can to be saying that I want to draft Brock Bowers because of tight end history, yada, yada, all this stuff. He's just so good. I mean, if you put him in our wide receiver model, he might be the wide receiver three.
Right.
He's that good. And it's really, really difficult to put him anywhere but elite tight end prospect. Is he the greatest tight end prospect of all time, Heath?
I'm probably the wrong guy to ask that, but it seems like yes.
It seems like yes.
Now, he probably won't be for long. 2 years from now, we'll have some other kid that's 15 pounds heavier and had 4 million yards or something. But no, I think he probably is. Now, that being said, you talked about resisting. I'm not generally a guy that gets super excited about tight ends in the first round. He has to be drafted in the first round. There's times I've got him at 108. And I'd probably take him there if I couldn't get somebody to trade up, like if I couldn't talk somebody into the fact that he's the greatest tight end prospect ever. But I'm generally not somebody who, and I think like people will point to, well, yeah, but you missed Sam LaPorta last year. No, Sam LaPorta wasn't taken in round one. Dalton Kincaid was, and those people wish they'd taken Sam LaPorta now.
Right.
I don't plan on having a lot of Brock Bowers, but it's not so much because I doubt him. It's just like you talked about, we're not very good at evaluating quarterbacks. I'm not sure we're great at evaluating tight ends.
No, they're generally not. But this kid feels so freaking can't miss. I can't take my eyes off of the fact that everything is telling me that he's going to be dope, even more so than it was telling me about Kyle Pitts. I was really against the Kyle Pitts 1.01 in tight end premium leagues, even, you know,
right.
There was so much Kyle Pitts nonsense that, you know, he was a great prospect. I would argue he was probably, if not the best, one of the top two or three best tight end prospects of all time when he was coming out.
For sure.
So I didn't disagree with that. I just thought there's just too much to his game that's dependent on the offense. I think with Brock Bowers, it's a little less just because of his versatility.
Right.
You know, I felt like, you know, he's just a better blocker than Pitts. He's better after the catch. He's better on screens and all these types of things that you can do with him. So even if your team isn't this type of a passing attack, he can play in a different way and still get, you know, targets. I just really, really think that you could hand the ball to friggin' Brock Bowers. I mean, so his versatility and his excellence is what's leaning me towards thinking he may be worth a pick much sooner than the 1.8 in Superflex rookie drafts.
Well, I think that's like, if you want to draft him, you're going to have to, because me saying,
yes, you will.
Me say, like, people threw their phones when they heard me say that I'm reluctantly taking him at 108. I get that. And there may be a little bit of like, I was with you on the Kyle Pitts things. I fought a lot of fights against Kyle Pitts, and I didn't like it because I also thought he was really good. I just thought it was a bad choice, and I was right. And so maybe I'm feeling emboldened to just let's have that fight again. Now it's a lower cost now, but I mean, I wouldn't be, I guess in one quarterback leagues, he's probably going to be the 104, maybe sneaks into the 103 if he goes before
Rome.
That's
what I'm wondering.
Yeah.
I've said this. I think in like super tight end premium, so like 1.75 or 2.0.
Yeah.
Like if you are a full point per reception, more tight end premium leagues, super flex, I think he's going to go at the 101 in some cases.
Yeah. I'm going to advise against that.
You think? But I mean, like, you know, that's the fervor I think he'll bring, especially, look, I don't know where he's going to be drafted, but it's going to be top 15. An athlete like that who can play the slot and do everything. I just think he's going to be for sure in the top 15. And if he goes to, what if he goes to the Jets? I know that's a popular spot, you know.
I'm not going to think that's a great thing for him.
I'm not sure either, but I don't know.
Yeah.
What's the best landing spot?
Ooh, like I've seen people talk about the Colts, and I've kind of got mixed feelings about that, but I mostly think that that would be good. I hadn't thought about the best landing spot for him. Dallas?
Correct. That's actually correct. Good job.
Thank you.
That was amazing. We went team by team a few shows ago and we're like, what's the best landing spot? It's Dallas for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know that Dallas has, they'd have to trade up.
Right.
But I wouldn't put it past him. I mean, especially if he falls past 10, 11, 12 and he's there in the, you know, mid-teens, I wouldn't put it past him at all.
They'd throw six targets a game to you if you were playing tight end in Dallas. That's just what they do. They just rotate in guys to throw 100 passes to.
I'm going to have to stretch a little bit, though, just so you know. I mean, I'm a little tight, the hamstrings.
Do you remember Jason Witten seeing 118 targets in that offense?
I'd look a whole lot like Jason Witten out there.
But no, Bowers there as like the number two to Lamb would be a beautiful thing.
Dude, that's the spot, just so you know.
Yeah.
That would have me thinking 1.01.
I wouldn't get there, but yeah, it'd be great because he'd go up a little bit higher and I can draft somebody else that I want to.
Yes. All right. Well, I know I got to get you out of here, but we'll finish on this. Let's just talk about open conversation about the running back class, because I think I could ask you a question. There's 20 guys we could ask a question about. I don't know which one you want to talk about, what you think. Let's just kind of bounce this off each other. I mean, what are your thoughts about this running back class? Who you like? What are you thinking here?
Yeah, I think like every person who's talked about this class has probably said the same thing. Let's see who goes on day two to the Chargers and the Cowboys, and those are going to be our favorite guys. And there's a drinking game on FFT Dynasty that we have to say Blake Corum to the Chargers every show.
Every show.
And so, like, I think I've kind of settled on Jonathan Brooks, in my opinion, is the best running back in this class, but he's going to be discounted because of the ACL. Trey Benson feels to me like the most likely guy that somebody's really going to try to force into that 250 plus touches for a couple of years. And he might be good at it. I'm not sure. And then Blake Corum, I would expect, again, is going to be he's the type of running back that some coach is going to love. And I think what I said a couple weeks ago on the show was like, he's the guy who's going to have a top 12 running back season, and dynasty managers are going to complain for the entire summer about how terrible he is right after he finishes top 12.
Yeah. So he's just good, right? He's not prolific, but he's just a pro's pro.
Right.
You know, I think you probably saw the overlay of him and Marshawn Lloyd running the drill at the combine or whatever. And it's not like the only thing in the world, but that drill confirmed my priors, which is that while he isn't athletic, he's so skilled. And
he's a professional running back. Yes.
Bingo. He's just so good at it that he overcomes that with his professionalism. He's just really, really good. And I think for those, he's a good goal line back. I know that probably many of people have said this, that goal line is a skill. He has that skill too. Yeah. Like, he's a skilled back. So I think you're right that he's going to be a coach's pet for sure. And he's going to earn playing time because, oh, look, he's doing good at everything we ask him to do. And that's going to earn carries. You know, I always say targets are earned, carries are given, but they're given to the guy who's on the field, and being good at a lot of shit gets you on the field.
Yeah. And it's certain that like 2.5 years from now, there's going to be some really fast running back that's on the team with Blake Corum that everybody's complaining. Why don't they give that guy the ball more? Why do they keep giving it to Blake Corum? It's because Blake Corum does his job. And so he's going to get the ball. So that's my top three.
Same
for now.
Yeah. And Trey Benson, I've had, I think I had, you're going to have Thor. You can ask him about this. I had Thor on. He didn't like him. I mean, when I say didn't like him, I mean, at ADP,
Right.
There was a ton of guys I had on that didn't like him. John Lobb didn't like him. Right. All these college guys, Felix Sharp didn't like him. Who was the other college guy I had on? Didn't like him. I mean, it was just, I had four college guys on, week after week after week. We talk about Trey Benson. They're all like, Ray GQ. So all four of them were kind of like, no, I don't know what the hell's wrong with him. He's not da da da. And I don't know if it's because these guys play college football fantasy and he let down a little bit in that regard. I'm not putting words in their mouth. I'm just saying like he did disappoint in terms of statistically on a team that was, basically undefeated the whole year. Maybe that has something to do with it. There is some, when I watch him on film, I see some plays where like, he's the best running back in the class easily. Yeah. And then you watch some plays, you're like, where is he going? Like, what is he doing out there?
No, it's that inconsistency on a play-to-play basis. But I'm just not so sure that can't get better. Now, whether he accepts the coaching and it gets better or not, we're not going to know that. But I do think that the big plays that he makes are going to cause some team to like want to give him multiple chances to figure it out.
Totally. I mean, big, strong, fast. young, right? Like that's the type of running back we've always been targeting in dynasty. Mm-hmm. And there may be a cost savings too, you know, in our rookie drafts, depending on where he gets drafted. And yeah, the draft is going to certainly, you know, change our opinions as it does every year. I always bring out the guys like, you know, Jamar Jefferson, Kylan Hill, Kyren Williams was another one. Like, yeah. You know, as we get closer to the draft, we have these guys way up there. And then all of a sudden the combine and or the draft or their pro day or whatever, this month sort of just, you know, washes out dream. Zach Evans, Sean Tucker, every year there's guys that were like, huh, Zach Evans probably going to the second round. I wonder where he's going to. And then he right. sixth round never plays, you know? So this is something that we're going to have to wait in terms of a sleeper or further down the board. Make my day. Tell me who the sleeper is.
I think that's one of the more difficult questions to answer because whose rankings are you using?
I like know. You can that's find, why I'm curious to see what you think.
You can find guys that are right RB12, RB15, and somebody else will say, no, that guy is not a sleeper. I think he's the third best running back.
That's a fact.
But I do like what I've seen from Ray Davis. So I'm going to say, assuming he's the guy who's going to be available in round three, like that's the guy that, man, if you can just get him into space, nobody tackles him.
Right.
So I think he's got some, I don't know that there's going to be a guy that comes out of the round three of rookie drafts that turns into a workhorse running back. We just don't have very many of those, period. And so I'll take somebody that, you know, well, if he happens to get 170 touches one season, he can make enough guys miss, turn that into fantasy production.
I'm going to give you two guys that you tell me if you're with me or against me here. I think Will Shipley is getting a little overlooked. I think he's got pass catching chops. I think he's big enough to carry a bit more of a load than people give him credit for. Maybe because he's a white guy. I know he gets automatically comped to CMC and he ain't quite CMC. No. Of course he's not. And that's not the point. I think he is more of a guy that can play a second half of a two-headed backfield, which almost all backfields are at this point. And he can play the more profitable side, which is the guy that catches the passes. So, you know, if he and Braylon Allen ended up on the same team, you know, and they cleared the running back room and it was just those two guys, I'd have Will Shipley way over him because I think he's going to get the more valuable touches in that equation. I like Will Shipley. What do you think of Will Shipley?
I think you were right. Like, I don't have a strong opinion on Shipley either way, but I think you were right in that we got to get away from the idea of this guy can't ever be a workhorse. So I don't really have that much interest in him because there aren't enough of those guys. We need guys like we saw from Achane last year, like we saw from Spears a little bit last year, those guys who can work with 10 to 12 touches per game and still be fantasy relevant. And there's kind of two ways to do that. You can be the hyper efficient average 6 yards per carry and bust a play once every seven plays, or you can be the guy that a high percentage of your touches are catches. And like that Shipley kind of fits that second profile a bit better.
Yeah. And then my last guy, and I know he's a lot of people's guy now. I came out as my guy a long time ago. I'm not saying I called him. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I'm not being influenced by the crowd is all I'm saying is Kamani Vidal. And I keep hearing Kamani Vidal from a lot of different places. I wonder now if the NFL is one of those places that likes Kamani Vidal, or if this is going to be one of those Twitter things where it's like, we're all a bunch of idiots. But man, oh man, you know, every time I see something about Kamani Vidal, it's just, you know, I forget what it was. It was some sort of stats and analytic thing that, you know, wasn't ESPN. It was this other thing. It was like they were trying to track with the GPS data who's the most sort of athletic running backs in this class. And Kamani Vidal was number one on their board. It wasn't their ranking. It was just that he, given the data, was the most athletic. And I was like, holy shit. You know, this kid, I didn't think he was going to run fast. And he ran a 4.45 or whatever he did at the combine. I mean, wow. Very, very productive. What do you think of Kamani Vidal?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with the athleticism. The rare combination that he has, and it's something that I read in the RSP from Waldman, is that he's also a very smart runner. Like, I think that he was having in the opening paragraph talking about it all, he talks about how there's some similarities to DeAndre Swift, and we know how the fantasy community's fallen for him. But DeAndre Swift has some deficiencies that gets him taken off the field for guys like Blake Corum, right? Or guys like Kenneth Gainwell, even sometimes, or Jamal Williams. Like, it's just like, if the hole's 5 yards deep, I want the, or 5 yards wide, I want DeAndre Swift. If it's one, I probably want somebody else to hit that hole. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's possible. Now, it's probably still a little bit of a long shot, but Vidal could be that guy who has that type of athleticism, but actually pairs it with decent vision and knowing how to run the football.
Yeah, I first unearthed him with the activity I do every year, Heath, which is the I take the projected, like mock draft database, and I just go down the running backs, and I don't even know all of them. I mean, obviously the top guys I do. I literally put their name and then highlights into YouTube. Literally, I do every back and whatever, 40 of them. It takes me however long. What's that? You know, I mean, I just put it in and I just watch highlights of each back just to like, I don't even know some of them what they look like. You know what I mean? If they're, I don't know anything. And simultaneously, I pull up their college stats and I just do that. And that's how I 30,000 foot view introduce myself to these motherfuckers. And a lot of them I watch, I'm like, God, this is not an NFL back. I just move on. And Kamani Vidal was way down there. He was like a 6th round pick for mock draft database or whatever. I'm like, I almost didn't even look at some of these guys. They're so far down. I put in Vidal. I'm like, what the hell? This guy is unbelievable. I mean, he's such a technician in and out of the hole. He's so, so good. I got to tell you, man, go put on some film, watch him in specific games, watch him against the best level of competition. He's just a really, really skilled back. Thor Nystrom, you're going to have him on. Gave him a Jaylen Warren comp.
Okay.
And I think Waldman did too. He said basically he's who we wish DeAndre Swift was. He's somewhere between Jaylen Warren. He kind of made Jaylen Warren his floor. And if we dream in a lab, Maurice Jones-Drew.
Okay.
So he has him in that sort of a spectrum. And gosh, if that dude gets 4th round draft capital, let's go.
That's fantastic. Love it.
Let's go. Hey, man, I know you got to get going. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. You are awesome. You're such a smooth pro, man. I really appreciate you coming. No, you are, man. You're awesome. You really are. I mean that.
Well, I enjoyed talking to you a few weeks ago, and this was a blast. I appreciate all the compliments. I'm not sure I deserve them all, but this was a good time. I enjoyed chopping it up about Dynasty.
Thanks, buddy. You're fantastic, and I know all the people love you sharing the time on this program. My listeners are cuckoo and crazy. They absolutely love football, love Dynasty, and we just give them all the red meat that they want, and you gave it all to them today. Great, great show. So thank you so much for coming on. Your show on CBS Sports, the Dynasty show, to me has become a little bit of a must watch. You're doing a great job. You are the opposite of me. You're concise and professional, which is amazing. So if you're into that, you may not want to go check it out because he's very, very good at this, unlike me, guys. So at the end of the day,
it's a funny thing. I'll tell you just a short story to kind of make fun of myself. Because I do know that and people get frustrated with that sometimes. They want me to talk a little bit longer. And sometimes I feel like I made my point in like 3 sentences and I don't have anything else to say about the topic. But when I'd never done, obviously, any sort of TV before when I started at CBS. And so there's a producer back there that as soon as it goes to me, I start talking and they like to show you for just a few seconds and then switch over to the graphic that kind of highlights whatever you were saying. Right. And there was this terrible habit for more than a year of they would show me and I'd start talking and I'd go through my spiel. And right at the moment that they switch over to the graphic, I'm done. I don't have anything else to say. And so I've really been working on trying to elaborate a little bit more on my points and talk just a little bit more. But it's real. I think what's really great is to have a show like we did here today where you got a little bit of both. It's not great if you have two guys who are both going on for 10 minutes at a time because you forget the other guy's even there. And it's way too short of a show if you got to talk two guys that want to talk a paragraph at a time.
Well, Heath, I've grown a lot in this space over the course of time. And my first crime was just talking too much. And the reason is twofold. Number one, I talk too much. but number two was I wasn't skilled enough and confident enough to set up my guest, and because that's not easy. It's just not easy. Right. I don't know how to say it. Everybody can do a podcast until they have a podcast, then podcasting's fucking hard. just the fact of the matter, because I remember before I did, I was like, fucking kill it, bro. Get me on there. You know, I'm Mr. Confident, but it's hard. It's not easy. And, you know, so I had a lot of times where I was like, okay, keep going to fill the space. Otherwise, I just, you know, it's just hard.
Right.
So in it, I've addressed the second one. The first one, I still talk too much, so it's fine. But you know, after all, it is a podcast. It is talking
That's right.
A fucking living. So, but yeah, no, it's great, man. I love having you on. Anytime you ever want to come back, you got something to say to the world. Open forum here, man. You're the man. I absolutely love you. I appreciate the friendship too. So thank you so much.
We will definitely do it again.
Absolutely. That is Heath Cummings. Heath Cummings can be found on Twitter at Heath Cummings Senior. And check him out on CBS Sports. On behalf of everybody here at the Undroppables, on behalf of everybody here at the Undrafted, on behalf of the greatest podcast producer to ever walk the land, Mr. Michael P. Duncan, you have been joined by the pro, Heath Cummings. I am Jax Falcone, and we are out.